You're listening to The Point, and today we're honoring Veterans Day. We shift our focus now to poetry and music of war and the stories of those who continue to write and compose even during their service. Joining us is pianist Jacqueline Swab. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also with us is retired Judge Gregory Williams. Good to have you back as well.
Thank you.
All right, so you collaborated on this program that you've titled Battle Lines, Poetry and Music of World War I and II. So what was the inspiration for putting together this program?
Well, I think it probably grew out of my interest in the poets of World War I. Before I actually did something that would enable me to have a job, I went to graduate school at the University of London and got a master's degree in 20th century British literature. And one of the subjects that we discussed during that course was the poetry of World War I, just before and after World War I. So I had an interest in it for a long time. And then involved Jacqueline in it last year.
Yeah. And it just so happened that I had done the year before a concert of American pieces from World War I, so I was already excited about the topic.
Yeah, and it's a big topic. I mean, there's a lot you could choose from. So and we're going to hear some poetry in a second, but Jacqueline, the music, how did you decide what you wanted to include?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question, but we worked with the poets and the story that we're telling through the poems, and from the early optimism through to the really horrendous waste of lives, mm-hmm. and what they went through, and so in some ways pieces became clear. We also wanted to show, and our program last year was Anglophile program. It was from the point of view of England. This year we're expanding to have some. It's the year that America, the anniversary of the time America entered the war. So we're including some American, more American poems, and lot of it's still Anglophile. And then we have some French music pieces because of the site of so many battles. That helped narrow down the topic.
Greg, you've described Wilfred Owen as perhaps one of the finest poets of World War I.
Right.
He was a poet before he enlisted. Tell us a little bit about his work before his service and how it might have changed.
Well, he was both a student and a teacher before he entered the war. In 1915, he enlisted in the army in a unit called the Artist Rifles Officers Training Corps. He was commissioned a second lieutenant, and he ended up with what was called the Manchesters. So many of these poets were working poets at varying levels before the war, but once they became enmeshed in the combat of World War I, their poetry changed and intensified. And Owen is one of those people who experts now consider to be one of the poets who really would have become a giant in 20th century British literature, more than he is even now. Mm-hmm. His poetry, they thought, would really develop, and he would become somebody really special in the Keatsian tradition.
How was the work that Owen wrote during the war found, and is it surprising that his work and the work of other wartime poets were preserved and documented?
Well, a lot of the poets had contact back in England. One of the people whom they had contact with was a guy named Edward Marsh, who was a publisher, poet, and teacher. And so they would communicate with him. There are other poets, however. For instance, there was a very young guy named Charles Hamilton Sorley, who was 20 years old when he was killed during World War I. His poetry was found in his knapsack after his death. He really hadn't any kind of a publishing career before the war. But some guys like Owen, Siegfried Sassoon, even Isaac Rosenberg to some extent, they already had some contacts. Mm. It was just that the war changed, obviously, the subject matter of their poetry and really intensified their focus.
Do you want to read a poem of Owen's?
I could read one of Owen's. The one I've actually got tapped up here is by Siegfried Sassoon,
okay.
If I could read
you,
that one.
You can
one.
Read that one, sure.
The one that I thought what might be a good one. Sassoon was a man who, very interesting guy, like a little bit more well-educated and certainly in a higher social level than almost any of these other poets. He was an upper-class guy who became an officer and a very aggressive soldier during World War One. Like Owen, he won the Military Cross as a result of his combat exploits, and he became really so aggressive during the war that his soldiers called him Mad Jack. He went out on these almost suicidal missions. But he, despite that, survived until 1967. But he wrote a poem called Glory of Women, which kind of illustrates the bitterness of some of these poets and also acts as a counterweight to the jingoistic tone of civilians back in England, who, of course, were pretty physically close to the battles. In fact, there were people in England who could hear some of the battles sometimes that were going on in Flanders and France. Siegfried Sassoon's poem is called The Glory of Women. You love us when we're heroes home on leave or wounded in a mentionable place. You worship decorations. You believe that chivalry redeems the war's disgrace. You make us shells. You listen with delight by tales of dirt and danger fondly thrilled. You crown our distant ardors while we fight and mourn our laureled memories when we're killed. You can't believe that British troops retire when hell's last horror breaks them and they run, trampling the terrible corpses, blind with blood. O German mother, dreaming by the fire, while you are knitting socks to send your son, his face is trodden deeper in the mud.
Mm. What was his poetry like before the war?
Sassoon's poetry was really in the Georgian, what was called the Georgian poetry tradition, very pastoral, very lyrical. And that changed,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, experiences. Jacqueline, perhaps more than poetry, music is woven into the fabric of daily life. Music is sung and performed by almost everyone, not just professional musicians. So tell us more about the music that was created and sung by the soldiers.
And some of these I've actually learned from Greg, and so I might bring him into this. Mm-hmm. But many of the soldier songs, they're simple. They're folk songs, really. The trench songs, you can just join in right away. In fact, we're hoping to get our audience to join in with us. And but they're some of them are very stinging. You're sort of lulled into thinking, oh, we're having fun here, and then at the end you realize in one of them that if the officers are busy drinking, here is the lowly soldier hanging on the old barbed wire, and it just the stinging barb is at the end of the song
So in a way, Greg, was it that this sort of was a distraction? Because obviously you're not having a good time when you're singing these songs, but is it a distraction? Was that what the trench songs were all about?
Probably. And so many of these men were, as a lot of people in Britain, were soaked in this British music hall tradition, which had started in the middle of the 19th century. It was sort of like vaudeville in a way. You know, you'd go to this theater and there'd be these shows, but there were also always incorporated these sing-alongs. And
this still exists, actually.
Still this exists.
Is the panto, the British,
right.
English panto.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a feature of a lot of pub life in certain places in Britain. The one that Jacqueline's talking about is usually called Hanging on the Old Barbed Wire, and that's one that we sing at the show.
Yeah. And so these trench songs, did they make it back into the communities as the soldiers returned home, or was this something that they were reticent to share with their experiences in the battlefield?
Well, not the ones that we do at the program, but a lot of those trench songs were, and this is going to come as a big surprise, very obscene.
Oh.
So they didn't come home so much.
This won't be an X-rated
show.
We don't
have any of those selected for this program.
Right. Do you want to talk about we're going to play a couple of cuts that you brought along. You want to talk about one of them? Which one do we want to hear?
Sure. And actually at the concert, I'll be playing some classical music, some beautiful pieces by Ravel that were written, each movement of this Le Tombeau de Couperin suite. I'm going to only play two movements at the concert that were written in honor of friends of his who died. Gentle pieces, they don't necessarily sound sad. You can just, he's really just describing the personality, I think, of his friends. But I don't have a recording of those. And I'll also be playing some music hall songs and a great anthem associated with England, Jerusalem, by Sir Hubert Parry that I think was in the Chariots of Fire. Anyway, people will recognize it. Very stirring anthem. And then a folk song, Flowers of the Forest. But since I don't
have
recordings
of
those,
sample of
so I brought along an Irish parlor song by Thomas Moore, the "Tis the Last Rose of Summer," and it was written at the turn of the 19th century, but still sung here in America and in England on maybe on St. Patrick's Day, and it's really a song of loss that you don't want to be the last rose left on the bush, and the power of community.
Let's hear a little bit of
okay.
that.
Okay.
So it's beautiful, kind of a melancholy feel, right?
Yeah.
Is that,
yeah,
that, does
yeah.
that describe it?
Yeah.
That's what we're going for.
Yeah. Yeah. So reflective, making people kind of really think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're not going hoping to hit people over the head with the glory of war, but more what, although some of the pieces will reflect that, but some will just give people time to think about things, but it won't all be
right. Doom and gloom.
Leaden yeah. and doom and
well,
gloomy.
Greg, one of the things you mentioned that was the surprising statistic that we went before we went on the air. You talked about the number of Oxford grads from what, 1930?
The graduating class from the colleges of Oxford University of 1913, 31%. Of those men were killed in
World
War I.
That's amazing, isn't it? 31.
It was it's shocking.
Yeah. How was the war and the experience of war reflected in music that was being written for performance, say, mostly in music halls at the time, not necessarily written by the soldiers themselves, but did it reflect what was...
Yeah, we'll be doing a song, "Keep the Home Fires Burning," and another one, "Oh, It's a Lovely War," that's much that you could take as very sarcastic song, or as a patriotic song, it could really be taken both ways. And so, and in America, we had "Pack Up Your Troubles" mm-hmm. and "An Old Kit Bag" and "Smile, Smile, Smile." Again, reflecting the rah rah rah.
Right.
Here we go off to war. In the early 20th century, in general, we're talking the ragtime era, and I'm not actually. I love playing ragtime, but I'm not playing any ragtime in this concert. But a lot of the music, the popular music, had that uplifting feel.
Right.
Surprisingly, in the popular music, there's less. Maybe less reflection in a way, but in often the way I play, I love playing, to use the word play different ways, playing with a piece to bring out a different side of it. So yeah. I think that's always there as a possibility.
Yeah, if I could just interject something, because Jacqueline mentioned that "Pack Up Your Troubles and Your Old Kit Bag and Smile, Smile, Smile." Owen wrote a poem later in the war. That song came out, I think it was published in 1915. He wrote a poem a couple of years later called "Smile, Smile, Smile." Has a much different tone.
Mm. So some wartime poets were even, as you mentioned, submitting while in service. What are examples of those poets, and how was their work received both in the literary world and by the public?
You mean during the war?
Yeah, during the war.
You know, it depended. It was kind of a real... variants in the works that were being published during the war. A poem that a lot of people know, for instance, is "In Flanders Field," which is actually by a Canadian officer and doctor. That one had more of the tone, that kind of melancholy tone, and not the bitterness that you would find in Owen, Sassoon, and Isaac Rosenberg to a certain extent. So sometimes the public didn't want to hear about that bitter side of things. That was a soldier's experience that they try to convey to the civilian population of Britain. And it was not always well received. And one of the people who really didn't like it and kept it out of the English verse anthology was William Butler Yeats.
Interesting.
He said this stuff is, in essence, transitory. It's got nothing really to do with the general British poetry tradition, and we're just not going to put it in.
Do you want to read one more poem?
Sure, I could. What kind would you like?
You decide.
I'll decide. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll read one that was written by another very famous poet, and this gentleman died early in the war, actually of septicemia, while he was serving in the Naval Reserve in the Mediterranean. It's Rupert Brooke, who, and a lot of people know this one stanza, and I'll read this as kind of a counter, if you will, to the bitterness of the later poetry by Owen and Sassoon. And this poem was read from the pulpit of St. Paul's Cathedral. But the first stanza of it is, it goes as follows. If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever England. There shall be in that rich earth a richer dust concealed, a dust whom England bore, shaped, made aware, gave once her flowers to love, her ways to roam, a body of England's breathing English air, washed by the rivers, blessed by sons of home.
Mm. Yeah,
of course,
different tone. Yeah.
The people love that stuff.
Yeah, right. So as you compare the music and poetry that came out of the First World War and the Second World War, are there striking similarities or differences in themes and composition?
Well, we only do World War One, and it's odd that there is so much more poetry to choose from with World War One than there is from World War Two, and people talk about that. There were World War II poets that people might know. In Britain, there was Keith Douglas. In the United States, there was Carl Shapiro. Randall Jarrell was another one. But we've never really included World War II poetry in
maybe
our
next project.
And I'm thinking that maybe we should and make it really more American central.
But certainly there is a lot of dark music that came out of World War II, and also music written in the concentration camps, and Messiaen, famous composer, but also a lot of music hall songs, Kurt Weill, beautiful stuff, but very, very, very dark. And maybe our society was ready to hear that by that point.
So you're going to be giving two performances of Battle Lines, poetry and music of World War One, and that's going to be in West Barnstable at the 1717 Meeting House on Saturday, November 11th at 7 p.m., and then again at the First Congregational Church in Chatham on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. And we're going to post all the program details at our website, capeandislands.org. Greg Williams and Jacqueline Schwab, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle.